Want to advertise your business in a cost-effective way? It's time to give podcast advertising a try. Research shows a high rate of podcast listeners made a purchase as a result of an ad they heard on a podcast. Visit podbean.com/brands to launch a cost-effective podcast advertising campaign in minutes. That's podbean.com/brands.
Welcome to Yolitics, the home of cold beer and hot takes on Texas politics.
All right, we are back, and we have a special episode for you today. Thanks, everybody, for downloading once again and taking a listen to us. Jason Wheeler here with Jason Whiteley. And Jason, I have cracked open a new one today, and you've probably had this from the Bishop Cider Company. That's in Dallas, right?
It is. That's off of industrial or what? I don't know what the new name of the place is.
Yeah. And I'm having
the Design District.
And I'm having the Texas Tea. Have you had this?
Man. Dang, man. You always show me up. I'm having... I have not had it. Is it good? Is it tea?
It tastes... No. There is a caveat here. This is the black tea and lemon flavor. And I will give the caveat in that you really have to govern yourself with this. And you know, we like to promote responsible things here on this podcast. And this one, you can... Especially if it's warm outside... You can put away quite a few of these and not realize it because it tastes like tea.
Pro tip, huh?
A little Texas tea. What do you have?
It's 8 a.m., so it's okay, man. You can have what you want at 8 a.m. No problem at all.
Breakfast.
I need to go back and get some more Texas beers. I have a Japanese beer. I had sushi the other night, so I bought some of these. Sapporo.
Well, you know, first of all, that's a good one. And secondly, you're
couching it for me, man.
You're a high paid globetrotting guy. I mean, you've been to Japan many times how many times have you been to Japan now?
A couple times.
Okay. That's a couple times more than most people. So, you know, we'll let you have the Sapporo there. That's one of these days I aspire. Yeah. I'm just having a little lowly Texas tea from little lowly Dallas.
Let's talk about something that I guarantee you all of our listeners have probably seen scrolling through their Facebook pages.
Yes.
Or Twitter.
Or on TV
or
even.
On Instagram or on TV or TikTok, wherever you are. I guarantee you have seen an ad most likely from the Lincoln Project. Mm-hmm. Have you seen these?
Yes. And if you have seen one of these and you're not sure if it was from the Lincoln Project, these are unmistakable. They are, you know, punch the other candidate in the face tough ads that don't pull any punches, and they turn them around fast, and they have one target and one target only, and that is President Trump.
Yeah, these are the Morning in America things we saw with sunrises over dairy farms and stuff like that with Ronald Reagan. This is cutthroat. Why is it cutthroat? Well, the Lincoln Project, if you don't already know, and I'm going to be surprised if you don't already know this, but the Lincoln Project is a group of Republicans who are campaigning against President Trump. You might call him a rhino. They'll take whatever name you want to give him, but they say, hey, listen, we are conservative to the core. But this is who we are, and they are campaigning against Donald Trump. They think he's an existential threat not only to their party, but also to the country as, you know, at large. Mm-hmm. Nevertheless, they are pulling no punches in ads, in campaigning, in investing money, in all kinds of things as we really wind in on this election. Not just nationwide, Jason, here in Texas.
Yeah, and, you know, Texas has for so long been known as this conservative bastion, this ruby red state that was reliably Republican. Democrats have said for years that they want to flip it. They still haven't been able to do that. They think that this year could be their year. But as one of our recent guests says, it's not a flip until it's a flip. So they haven't done it yet. The Lincoln Project wants to help them get there, though, and they are putting their money where their mouth is. And here in our Humble podcast. They are making some news today about what they're willing to put down as far as money goes to get this message out for those voters who haven't headed to the polls yet, including you, Jason. You haven't cast your vote yet. You're the, well, I guess you're not actually the one that they're looking for. They're being very clear about who they're targeting here, and they're micro-targeting here in Texas with a lot
of
money.
About to hear. Indeed so. You're about to hear exactly who they're targeting here in Texas. But we got on the phone here Mike Madrid. He is one of the co-founders of the Lincoln Project. He's kind of the data guy at the Lincoln Project. And he's worked since, what, for 40 years for Republicans, for presidential campaigns, congressional campaigns all across the country. And here he is, 40 years into his career as a political operative, never expecting in a million years he'd be working against Republicans on the same side as Democrats. And Mike, you know, he's here to explain why he's doing it. We are about, what, 2.5, 3 weeks away from the election. And you have a smile on your face. Tell me why.
Well, I just like hearing the name Texas now. There's so much going on. There's an energy down there. There's a focus. And look, I'm sure we'll get into the nuts and bolts of this, but the more we focus and talk about it, the more I think it's a recognition of just how 2020's election cycle is turning out.
Well, some of that energy down here has been from your group, the Lincoln Project. Tell us a little bit about what you all have been doing here in Texas and what made you decide to dive in and start spending some real money here. This is a Republican stronghold for years.
Yeah, so look, I'm a California Republican operative. And so for the past 20 years, a lot of my work and data work has been comparing Texas to California, right? These are two very similar states on paper. They both have, you know, a plurality of white voters, Latino votes increasing significantly. Their economies aren't terribly dissimilar. So my analysis over the past really two decades has been looking at why one is red, 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 why one is blue, blue, blue. And a lot of my work is kind of clashing here at this moment in time with 2020. And the data has been telling us since about March timeframe that Texas is going to move into play. It's going to move into contention. And so as the data guy with the Lincoln Project, you know, I've kind of brought this up with the other founders as we've been making our strategic decisions. The truth of the matter is every one of us, myself included, is going, yeah, but it's Texas, right? All of our experience says it's Texas. It's going to move back. It's going to move back. It hasn't moved back for 6, 7, 8 months. It's been a dead heat. And so the answer then becomes why, and as I've been looking closer and closer at this, it's been more and more difficult to just ignore it and write it off and say this is Texas. I mean, it's in play, it just is. It doesn't necessarily mean Biden will win, but the fact that we're here 2 weeks out of an election and the president's spending money in Texas and he's got surrogates in Texas and the Lincoln Project is in Texas, Beto O'Rourke and the Democrats are doing what they're doing in Texas, means that there's something very, very real happening down in Texas.
Mike, last week or so, you guys spent, I think, $1 million on an ad buy. Quite a few people are spending money here. Does the Lincoln Project have any more ad investments planned for this state in the remaining days and weeks?
Yeah, that $1 million wasn't for the entire spend. That $1 million was just for 1 week because we were going to go in at that level, probably higher. So yes, we've been spending, by the way, that million was, we spent $1 million before that. We have been in Texas. We've been very quiet about it because we've been looking at it and doing our analytic work and seeing if it's worth making the investment. And like I said, sometimes in a campaign, you almost kind of prefer that if the numbers would come bad, it will give you an excuse to say, let's take this money and go back into Wisconsin. Let's go work in the tea in Pennsylvania. Let's go into Florida. But Texas won't turn away, right? It's like you kind of want it to give you bad data so it'll help us focus our resources. No, Texas is saying, come on down. I mean, the Republicans here are moving. We got 9 to 10% of Republicans that are saying we're voting for Biden. That's the only way you get to the polling numbers that you get as consistently as you get is there's a lot of white collar, high educated tech workers and Republicans in the suburbs. These are Republicans.
Wait, Mike, you said 9 or 10% of Republicans in Texas are voting for Biden? I haven't seen those numbers before.
Yeah, we're not only seeing those internally, but every public opinion poll is showing those numbers, those cross tabulations. If you look at the cross tabs, look, it's kind of it is shocking at first, but think about this. You can't get to dead heats in Texas unless you're losing, deteriorating with Republicans. You just can't. And so, here's the deal. the Texas Republicans are losing suburban Republicans, specifically women. Okay. These are college educated women. A lot of them are working in the high tech workforce. Culturally, they've had it with the party. They're like, I'm done. I can't do this Trump thing anymore. I'm checking out. That's the 10% that we're getting to. Where the Lincoln Project is going to be focusing on is what we call deep MAGA country. We're going hardcore into rural Texas to peel off just one out of 25, one in 30 of these Republican voters to say, let's make a vote for your country over your party at this moment in time. And if we're successful with that piece, we think that we can move Texas, at least for this election cycle, out of the Republican column and towards a better, more healthy way to kind of govern the country.
All right. So how do you grab Republican voters in that sea of red that if we, you know, break up the counties in Texas, you look out there and you just see the sea of red counties election after election? How do you reach those voters? How do you get that one out of 25 Republicans to turn and decide to vote Democrat or decide to just not vote at all?
That's a great question. So let me talk about the message. There's really two message points that we know quantifiably have worked. First of all, the COVID message. It's not working with all Republicans, but there are enough Republicans that believe in science that we can peel these numbers off just on that data point alone. Yeah. Got to remember, in the summer, when the numbers started going south and Abbott was kind of turning his back on science and Trump was pushing him to do the same, you saw Trump's numbers really fall to the lowest levels of his presidency. You also saw Abbott's numbers drop. You saw Cornyn's numbers drop. There was an overall souring on the Republican brand. So we're going to keep reinforcing that message that it's not just this guy's got bad character and he puts out vulgar tweets. It's that his mismanagement and incompetence is killing people. And people recognize that, especially with this older demographic, of which Texas, like most Sunbelt states, has a significant overrepresentation of seniors 65 plus. That older vote is hardcore Republican base. Okay, no Republican has ever won the White House without winning the senior vote, 65 years and older. Right now, Biden is winning that by about 12 points. So we're gonna keep doubling down on that message because Texans know what a COVID pandemic looks like. It's not like some of those areas of the country that haven't been hit. So COVID's the main message. But the other is, we found tremendous traction with the derogatory statements that the president made about our military members, military service. And so we're gonna be hitting very, very hard on that Atlantic story and some of those comments he made about our fallen soldiers being suckers and losers. And you saw John Kelly come out. Mattis is opposed. Some of the most respected names in the military have come out against this presidency, not only because it's a threat to our republic, but because he's disrespectful to our service members, and especially those that have fallen on foreign soil. So that look, the veterans' message, our troops, that speaks to every coalition, every component of the Republican side of the aisle. There's not one segment that isn't very strong pro-troop. And so we're going to be driving that message home very, very strongly. And we think we get to the numbers that we need to.
Yeah, of course, Fort Hood in Central Texas, Fort Bliss out in El Paso, the large contingent in San Antonio as well. Then Wichita Falls has a group up there. So a lot of veterans here. But Mike, you know the numbers well. You're the data guy for the Lincoln Project. But in 2016, Donald Trump won Texas by 9 points. That's the slimmest margin in the last 20 so years. We've heard about demographics, and you know, 20 years I've heard about demographics changing in this state. But every Republican insider I've talked to, everyone that I really respect and look at for data says he's still going to win probably by about 5 points or so. It'll be, you know, half of what it was last time. What do you say to those folks? Do you think that's the case, or do you think it's going to be slimmer than that?
I think that he might win as wide as five, but the bigger point is this: tactically, the Republican president of the United States has to defend Texas 2 weeks out of the election. So tactically, why would we not be pressing the case and forcing him to fight on his strongest base of support? That tells you everything you need to know about how he's doing in Iowa and Wisconsin and Georgia and Ohio and Pennsylvania and Florida and North Carolina. This president's in trouble. I mean, let's be honest about it. This guy's in deep, deep trouble when you're a Republican defending Texas. Now, having said that, we're not into moral victories at the Lincoln Project. We're into victories. So there's ample evidence to suggest that Texas is absolutely in play. Yeah, it's true. Trump won by 9, but, you know, McCain won by 16, okay? And Romney won by 11. Beto O'Rourke loses by 2.5 to Ted Cruz. That's called a trend line. Okay, the numbers are moving, and it predates Trump. He just put a foot on the accelerator and is moving these demographics. Incidentally, and as a Republican, when I've looked at Texas, I've said the same thing, because there's no way the Democrats don't understand Texas. They've always counted on the Latino vote, on the Hispanic vote, as the demographic change that they're talking about. That's not what's turning Texas bluer. What's turning Texas bluer is Texans are attracting a more college-educated, sophisticated, high-tech worker to the economies in Austin and Houston and Dallas and its suburban periphery. It's white voters that are changing. 10 years ago, the difference between California and Texas, as I mentioned, I've done a lot of work on this, has been white voters. In California, half of white voters are very conservative. The other half are very progressive. It's directly correlated to how educated you are. In Texas, as they're growing this new Silicon Valley type economy, you're seeing more educated workers move into Texas, and they're bringing their politics with them. So 10, 15 years ago, if you said white voters in Texas, overwhelmingly conservative Republicans, not just Republicans, conservative. It's now getting to 50-50, just like California. That may scare some people, but that's the real demographic reality. Is it's not Latino voters that are changing Texas. It's white college-educated voters that are changing Texas.
Okay, so now that we're up to speed on the demographics here, we know what the issues are in this election. What is it that you think Joe Biden, I mean, the Biden campaign just dropped $6.2 million in this state, which is a huge spend by a Democratic candidate coming down the wire like this toward Election Day. What is it that Joe Biden hasn't done or needs to do or should do in Texas if he were to actually try to flip this state? Is there a weak spot? Is there something he hasn't gotten to?
The biggest weak spot is whether or not you're going to, there's two things with the same demographic we haven't really talked about right now, and that is the Hispanic vote. Okay. Now I worked on George W.'s campaign back in 2000 for president, did independent work on the 2004 race. We concentrated very heavily on Hispanic voters. Texan Hispanics, of course, are a little bit different. You make them a little different down in Texas, the way you make everything a little different down in Texas, right? All good stuff. But here's the thing. There's going to be a record turnout of Hispanic voters nationwide. It will be the first time in history that Hispanics surpass black voters as the second largest ethnic voting group in America, right behind whites. Texas is going to be a central piece of that. You're already seeing this overwhelming turnout numbers in your state, 1 million on the first day of early voting. I mean, those numbers are astronomical. The question is, can Biden get that vote, the Hispanic vote, by more than 33%? If 33% or less stay for Trump, Biden can win Texas, okay? Mm-hmm. If Trump gets up to 35, 37%, it's gonna be very, very difficult. So the key for Biden to win Texas is he's going to have to make a strong, concerted persuasion push to Hispanic voters. They're already going to turn out. They already are. The question is what we call, how much of a break is he going to get? Is it going to break Biden's way to the tune of 67%? Is he going to hit 70%? If he drops below 67, hits 65, probably not enough to get there. That's going to be the determining factor.
Mike, I get emails from both campaigns every day, inundated with them. And I always look at the Trump campaign because I'm always curious if they are planning any visits here with Eric Trump, Donald Trump Jr., Ivanka, anybody. And they haven't planned a single visit here. So I'm just curious, you know, why you think they need to defend this if they're not actually planning a single rally or a conversation or a fireside chat or anything. They don't seem like they're actually, you know, worried about losing Texas.
Well, look, I hope that they're not, but the truth of the matter is the president was scheduled to be in Texas the Monday after he came down with a positive COVID infection when he contracted COVID. They also had Pascali and your lieutenant governor doing a bus tour in the past 3-4 weeks. So, look, they are worried about Texas. If they weren't, they wouldn't be doing these activities alone. The truth of the matter is, if you were to show up in Texas right now, that's basically raising the white flag. But he is in Georgia. He is in Iowa. These are states he won by 9, okay? So there's no doubt that the president's in trouble. I'm not going to say it's an odds-on bet for Biden in Texas, but I am going to say it's worth the Lincoln Project's investing in it. and having Republican groups going in there. We're not the only ones. You got 43 for Biden. There's a lot of Bushies that are involved with this effort too. Again, we're not into moral victories. We're here to win. Okay. I don't need a new narrative. I'm here to win races. So I think when Ted Cruz starts saying this is going to be a bloodbath, when John Cornyn is raising a 5-alarm fire, they're not kidding. They're seeing the same data that we're seeing, and there's a reason why they're worried, and that's because they should be.
I want to ask you about that term bloodbath there, Mike, because we heard that from the Republican senator from Nebraska, Ben Sasse, here recently in some leaked audio. A lot of people in your organization, a lot of people who are Republicans who are opposing President Trump this time around, still hold a lot of conservative values, may still have a lot of values in common with the Republican platform or the former Republican platform. Are you worried that your organization and others could destroy this party and cause it to have generations or a generation, let's say, to have to rebuild? Are you worried about decimating it to that point to where, for the next several elections, if indeed this one turns out to be a bloodbath, that Republicans struggle? Or do you think that that's necessary?
That's a fantastic question. It's one that, honestly, I have personally struggled with for some time. But the answer to me is also very clear. So let me say a couple of things. The first is I am a classical conservative. Okay, I have not changed any one of my belief propositions or my values as we began the Lincoln Project. I'm fighting Donald Trump because I'm a conservative, not despite the fact that I'm a conservative. Donald Trump has changed the Republican Party to a populist nationalist party away from the conservative party that I joined during the Ronald Reagan era and have spent my entire life and career building. Okay, I am a true warrior for the conservative movement, and I will remain so because that's what I believe in. That means Donald Trump is the greatest existential threat to conservatism that exists, and it is why I am fighting him. The question you ask is the right one. It's a practical one, and that is, does what the Lincoln Project is doing so damage and splinter the conservative movement that those values that I believe and hold dearly can't manifest themselves in our government, our system of government? That may be, but let me rephrase the way I view this. This is Donald Trump presents an existential threat to our country. He is a threat to the American experiment and to democracy itself. It doesn't matter what my policy positions are if we don't have a functioning, healthy democracy to implement that. This man has trampled the Constitution that I hold dear, the values that I believe in, and everything that I have worked for and adamantly fought for my entire adult life. So I am first and foremost an American. Then I am a conservative, and I will work in that order with that priority for those causes. I don't agree with Joe Biden on much. I don't agree with the Democrats on much. But the one thing I do agree on is America is worth saving, our Constitution is worth fighting for, and our institutions should be respected and not desecrated the way this president has done.
But a lot of his steadfast supporters would call someone like you a rhino, Republican in name only. Those steadfast reporters, even if he loses this election, probably aren't going to go away. Do you see coming out of this two Republican parties? Maybe one would call itself something different, but do you see that happening?
I don't know. We're not in the business of starting a new party. I am in the business of fighting for my conservative principles. They can call me a Republican in name only. I call them a conservative in name only. These people are not fighting for conservatism. They're fighting for republicanism, and republicanism is now the party of Donald Trump. It's about populism. It's about nationalism. It's not about conservatism. That is a fight I relish. I will fight it every day. If that requires another party, so be it. But what I will say is this. When we win in November, and I'm pretty confident we will, we are not done driving the populist nationalist elements out of my party and out of this country. Okay? This is just the beginning. This is a threat not only to republicanism and conservatism, it is a threat to the American Republic, and it's a fight that we are just beginning to fight.
Mike, where are they going to go, though? You have this whole other facet of millions of people who support President Trump. Driving them out of the party is one thing. Driving them out of the country, I mean, that's strong language there. Where do they go?
I don't care. I mean, I don't mean they have to physically leave the country. Everybody has a right to be here. But what I will do is work to so marginalize them that their voices are irrelevant in the political process, the same way that I have done in California. Okay, California Republicanism used to be the standard bearer of what it meant to be Republican. This is the home of Ronald Reagan and a home of Richard Nixon. And we were the landing place, the catalyst for the conservative movement. Today, the Republican Party is a weak, feckless, irrelevant, marginalized regional party. That is what is happening to the Republican Party nationally, and it is directly a result of its choosing that path. There is a very different way that we could be heading, and we had a million different off-ramps. This party has chosen to go down a route of white identity politics, of populism, of nationalism, and it is now reaping the unfortunate rewards of that very poor decision. It can still change its ways, but I'm not optimistic about it. I've seen this story play out before. I'm from California. I know how this story ends, and it's not going to end well for Republicans because they don't want to evolve. They don't want to change. They don't want to be welcoming of a new America and talk about conservatism. They're retrenching into this really ugly, metastasized form of white identity politics and nationalism, and I'll have none of that.
So bringing it back here to Texas now, Mike, we've got 2 weeks left before we get to Election Day here. What do you think the Lincoln Project will spend between now and the end of Election Day in Texas? You've indicated that you think that it is worth the investment.
We're looking at a budget right now. Again, break a little bit of news. We're looking at a budget of $4 million right now. I don't know that that's where we will or won't be.
In the next 2 weeks?
Well, Texas is a big state. You got a lot going on there. I mean, one of the real big opportunities that we are looking at is, again, these deep MAGA countries, okay? We've already moved the needle in suburban, you know, peripheries around Austin, Houston, Dallas, you know, all of those areas. We, like I said, we're already getting 9-10% of Republicans in those areas, statewide, frankly, but those are largely concentrated in those suburban communities. Where we're looking at now is a far more aggressive posture. We want to go into deep, rural, hardcore MAGA country in Texas and start making a difference. If we move just another 1% or 2%, it's probably game over if Hispanics turn out at the numbers that we think they're going to.
And is this TV ads, radio ads, hitting them on Facebook, texting them? How are you getting them?
Yes, yes, and yes.
Yeah. Mike. Everywhere.
Mike, you sound pretty confident that you think Joe Biden's going to win in November, but I remember 4 years ago, the momentum was with Hillary Clinton. The polls showed Hillary Clinton was ahead, and here we are 4 years later, and the momentum's with Biden, and polls show Biden is ahead. Should Biden supporters be really, really be getting their hopes up this far out?
Well, look, I think campaigns matter, and I don't think anybody should be getting their hopes up. I mean, I approach every race confidently because you have to, and if your guy, your data strategist isn't confident, then you ought to probably hire a different strategist. But what I will say is this, the fundamentals in 2020 are just profoundly different than 2016. You have a very, very small sliver of undecided voters, not just nationally, but in all the battleground states. So Biden is winning in, I think, every battleground state at this point, with the possible exception of North Carolina. But even where he is winning by a +2 or +5 margin, most of these are outside not only the margin of error, but they're also outside of the area of undecided voters. And it's not just one data point that we're looking at, it's numerous data points. You have to remember, Hillary Clinton was ahead by 6, 7, 8 points at this point in the election cycle, but you had 12-13% undecided. We haven't had 12-13% undecided in this entire campaign. It has been at 4, it's shrinking down to 3 and 2. And again, 30 million people have already voted. That's 20% of the voters have already voted at the lowest point of Trump's election cycle. So those numbers, we know mathematically, are going to break decidedly Trump. The question is, can Donald Trump throw a Hail Mary pass and connect and change the voter model by 10 or 12 points? That's never been done before in American history. I'm not saying it can't be done. I'm just saying it's never been done. So we'll wait and we'll see and we'll run as hard as we can all the way to the end. But I feel good about the fundamentals, not making any predictions, but I'd rather be Joe Biden than Donald Trump at this point in the race.
Mike, for many years you worked for Republicans to help Republicans. And I'm just curious, do you ever just, you know, kind of shake your head and think, wow, here I am. I'm opposing the Republican president for reelection. I'm doing everything I can to help the Democrat win here. If somebody had told you 15 years ago you'd be doing this, you probably would have laughed in their face.
If somebody told me, yeah, just 3 years ago I'd be doing this, I would have laughed in their face. Listen, I wake up and I experience heartbreak every day. There's something very tragic about working for 30 years of your adult life all over the country in congressional races, Senate races, and presidential campaigns for a party and a cause that you believe in with your entire being. But again, I'm an American first. and the threat is very, very clear. So as difficult as it is, and the many, many, many friends and personal colleagues that I have lost, do I lament that? It hurts. It hurts deeply. But I have not for one second hesitated to do what's right for my country, and I would do it again in a heartbeat.
Mike, you talked about moral victories. You're not into those. And you talked about potentially spending $4 million in Texas. I want to ask you about the Lincoln Project's ads, because these are particularly brutal ads, and they go after Trump in a way that Democrats haven't gone after a Republican in my lifetime. Can you talk about that? I mean, you know, I think Michelle Obama, when they go low, we go high. When they go low, you guys go lower, it seems like. I mean, am I wrong or what?
No, look, you're right. And I've learned a lot in this process. And the one thing I have learned is Democrats and Republicans fight differently. And the way I explain it is this, is Democrats try to win policy debates in order to bring people over. They want to be right. Republicans just want to win the race. And we approach things very differently. And neither is right, neither is wrong, but it does explain the difference between the way strategists work and operate. So that's a big part of it. Look, none of us relishes what we're doing here as a way for democracy to get healthier and better. But you also have to fight the enemy where he's at. If he's going to go low, we're going to go low and meet him down there. He's going to go to the gutter, we'll put on the hip waders, and let's just have a battle down in the gutter. Let's do it. Let's dance. You know, the Democrats don't seem to be able or willing to do that. And for the moment, that's fine. Like I said, we are fighting this fight the best way that we know how at the place where he has brought the debates to. You can't be aspirational when the person you're trying to defeat is cynical. So we're going to meet him where he's at. We're going to fight him on the ground that he's chosen. And we're going to fight him the way that we know best. So like I said, do I think that what we're doing is a healthy way for us to practice politics? No, but let's be honest. Our democracy is not in a healthy place. We are not in a good place. Is it because of Donald Trump? No, not exclusively, but he's absolutely exacerbated the situation. And we think you got to fight the enemy on the ground that he's chosen. We're more than happy to do that. I think we've been very successful to this point doing that.
But Mike, do you guys have like producers and editors working shift work, just sitting there waiting to cut these ads? Because it's amazing. The president will say something controversial and like an hour later, there's an ad.
Well, there ain't nobody waiting. I'll tell you that right now. They're working constantly. We have seven crews working and editing. So some of them are taking stuff immediately. Others are working on ads that are coming out in 48 hours. Others are working on ads that will come out next week. So we're constantly working in rotation to make sure that we're responding immediately to the president, driving the narrative in 2 days, and then also setting up for a longer narrative within a week's time frame. So yeah, this is not just two or three people, you know, that we're overworking and not allowing to sleep for months at a time. It's a very sophisticated operation that we recognize would have to be done differently. Look, love us or hate us, the Lincoln Project has redefined the modern campaign. We're driving the narrative at the 30,000-foot level, but we're also responding immediately to what is happening with the President of the United States. And in many ways, we've just kind of outdone Trump's techniques with what he was able to do in 2016. We've done it by a factor of 10. And what it's allowed us to do is concentrate and limit, in what we call bracket in the business, his communication strategy. So what he's saying is extremely limited because of our response and because of the attention that we get with our content. And it's limited, this unlimited megaphone that he's had and enjoyed for the better part of 3.5 years.
Mike, we'll look for some of those ads, man. Good to talk to you again, and appreciate the insight on what you guys are doing.
I love visiting with you guys. Love to be back if you'll ever have me again. And keep in touch. Be safe next couple of weeks. A lot of activity down in Texas. So let me know what you're hearing, too. I'd love to hear what you guys are hearing.
All right, so Jason, I don't know. Did you play sports at all coming through school?
I ran track and cross country because there was a girl on there that I really liked and wanted to get to know. So she ran track, so I joined the track team.
But she turned out to be a faster runner?
Much faster because
she ran away from you.
I never went out with her, yeah. She got the hell away from me, man. Way away.
That was not a setup question, by the way. There, you know, for as much time...
Why were you asking me that?
No,
yeah, why were you asking me
for
that?
For as much time as we spend together, there are many things that I still do not know about you. And yet, I am astounded over and over again at how much we have in common because I ran track too.
Really?
Yeah. And in fact, you know, among other things, I ran track, and that was the exact thing I was about to talk about. This is bizarre. We really do not plan anything in this podcast. Believe me, it's very loose. So, you know, here in track terms, we are in that home stretch, that horrible, dreadful point of the race where you are running along. I don't know if you hated this as much as I did, Jason. I hated when I could hear the crowd. I hate it when I rounded right. that last corner and I could hear people cheering, because then they're getting into your head and you're running and you're just trying to get to the finish line and you already feel dead. But here we are. We are in that home stretch. We are headed to the finish line. It's getting here fast. And boy, a lot of money is going to get thrown down in these last couple of weeks, not only from the candidates, not only from the campaigns themselves, but from places like the Lincoln Project. That is a, you know, we hear these big dollar figures that are thrown out. We tend to take them for granted. That is a ton of money, $4 million that they're planning to spend in 2 weeks in a place like Texas, where in years past, a Republican PAC saw no need to stop by Texas because it was just going to be reliably Republican.
Yeah, think about who they're targeting also. Latinos in the Valley, West Texas, and all over the state.
Mm-hmm.
Veterans,
mm-hmm.
El Paso, Fort Hood, Wichita Falls, San Antonio. And then they're also going after the rural vote.
MAGA country.
Yeah, MAGA, I don't know. I think he said MAGA. I've never heard MAGA before.
I haven't either.
But, you know, Beto made a point to visit all 254 counties. Mm-hmm. And I think he said he was the first Democrat, probably in a long time, a couple of decades, to actually go do that. They are making a play out there. And again, if you guys have seen their ads, these ads are, you know, it's black and white. There is no gray in between and no, you know, hopefulness in between it. They are cutthroat, you know, cut them off at the knees. That's exactly how they play. It's a Republican, page from the Republican playbook. And he explained that. And Mike should know. Mike has done this for 40 years. He knows how to do it. It's not about winning the policy arguments like Democrats want. It's about winning the race.
You know, I'm intrigued by this, too, because we are accustomed, and, you know, you might be totally sick of watching political ads. It seems like we've seen more of them this time around than in previous cycles here in Texas. And that's because so many of these races are competitive for the first time in a long time. You might be just sick to death of seeing ads on TV, in your Facebook feeds, etc. I'm intrigued by the fact that people in these little rural counties that are not in these major media markets where a lot of the ad money gets spent, people in these little rural counties who don't usually see a lot of this ad activity happening close to an election, they may start seeing the airwaves full of this as well. And as he said, they're going to be hitting them up on the cell phone and on their Facebook page in addition to that. So I find that intriguing, that people who normally are just not really talked to a whole lot in terms of advertising are going to be hearing a lot in these last 2 weeks, Jason.
And the Lincoln Project said if they can just peel off 1%, maybe 2% of the voters in rural areas, that's all they need.
It's amazing how little it takes to make a difference.
That's all it is. And I had never heard, and maybe I just missed me, but I had never heard that 9 to 10% of Republican voters were going for Joe Biden. I mean, that's... I'd never heard the number. I don't want to say it's remarkable, but I'd never heard the number. And when I talk to Republicans who are on the inside, know this, in the state, they tell me that they think that Trump will probably win by about half of what he did in 2016. He won by 9 in 2016. They think probably about 5% is probably what he'll get this time.
Mm-hmm.
You peel off 1 or 2 in the rural areas,
yeah.
That shortens it down even more. I mean, that's incredible.
I'm curious to see if we can get some new polling out before we get to Election Day, because I know that for a while there, I mean, they were neck and neck, Biden and Trump here in Texas. And then you saw Trump pull away by a couple of percentage points in the latest polls that have been released. I'm really curious to see, you know, with these ads hitting the airwaves and with, you know, us coming down to the wire, the home stretch, as I like to say, I'm really curious to see, does this tighten again as we get close to Election Day, or do we see the president pull ahead and sort of maintain his lead right now, or maybe even stretch it to that point, that margin that he won by in 2016, which would be exceptional because in some of the other states where he won in 2016, at least so far, the polls have shown in some of those states that he's underperforming compared to that 2016 level. It'll be an interesting horse race in the end here.
Yeah, it will indeed. I want to highlight one other thing that you asked in the interview with Mike Madrid there from the Lincoln Project, and that is we've talked about the civil war inside the GOP, and you asked about the, you know, the existential threat. Does the party destroy itself with this election? With you have, you know, some Republicans peeling away, some sticking with the president, you know, loyal base. What happens to the GOP? And when Mike mentioned that, you know, his end goal in this thing is to, you know, drive out these nationalists and the, you know, the extremists, and I don't remember the exact
populist
word he used, but the populists, but to drive them out of the party and then out of the country. Now, he may have been meaning figuratively out of the country.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know how you do it. Win or lose for President Trump, those people are not going away. Those people live on your block. Those people are going to be sitting down with you for Thanksgiving.
Yeah,
they're not going anywhere. The question is, how do you bring them all back in? And one of the first things I think you do, you got to, number one, turn off cable news. I pick up my phone and Twitter a hell of a lot less these days just because it's so full of just craziness.
Yeah.
Just craziness.
Yeah, you can see
it. I don't know
amping.
How, though, that you can't drive them out, but where do they go? How do you bring them back into the fold, Jason?
And what does that look like if you do separate out like that and become two parties? And do Democrats then go, well, why don't we separate into two parties too? Because there is the much more progressive wing of the party and the much more moderate wing. You never know what happens when you push down that first domino and say, what's this going to do?
We'll be like Europe, man.
Yeah,
we'll be like Europe and having to build the majorities in the factions, which might be a good thing.
Yeah, some people might like that. So, you know, now we're getting intellectual on you on this special release today. Hope you enjoyed listening.
That's what the beer does, man.
Yeah,
the
it does tend does to yeah. grease the wheels yeah. a little bit. you know, even if you completely disagree with some of these viewpoints, we like to put different viewpoints on here. And again, the reason that we just had to go forward with this one today is that they made news here on this podcast in talking about a substantial ad buy going into these last 2 weeks in Texas, which is a pretty staggering amount for this state, you know, to be spending against a Republican incumbent president.
Keep an eye out for those ads, because I guarantee you, you're going to see them.
And I hope that you enjoyed it. Again, even if it doesn't match your own beliefs, we try to cover it all. We try to run the gamut here on Yolitics. And we are back next Tuesday with another episode when we will be 7 days out from election. And I say we'll be back next Tuesday. We might be back before then. We don't know what pops up between now and then that might necessitate another special. But please subscribe to us so that you get these as soon as they're released every time. And as always, thank you very much for listening.
And don't forget to go vote. I'm going probably when this podcast is released here.